The tech hiring tip of the week is brought to you by Indeed. 73% of tech workers rank flexibility, hours, location, even workload as one of the top benefits that they value most. If your job ad doesn't highlight flexible policies, you're cutting out 3 in 4 candidates. Finding the right tech talent isn't just hard, it's mission critical. But with niche skills, hybrid preferences, and high salary expectations, it's never been more challenging to cut through the noise and connect with the right people. That's where Indeed comes in. As the number one site where tech talent applies for jobs, Indeed gives you direct access to over 3 million U.S. tech professionals, 86% of whom have applied through the platform. Indeed isn't just a job board, it's your tech hiring partner. From enhanced sponsored jobs to the tech network and smart sourcing tools, Indeed helps you reach candidates with the right skills at the right time, backed by data and AI. More quality applicants, less time to hire, and targeted tools that align with what tech candidates want, like flexible work options, career growth, and salary transparency. The data speaks for itself. If I needed to hire top-tier tech talent, I'd go with Indeed. Post your first job and get $75 off at Indeed.com/tech talent. That's Indeed.com/tech talent to claim this offer. Indeed, built for what's now and what's next in tech hiring. I'm away from home a lot. In fact, right now I'm running to a lunch in Manhattan, and I feel better knowing that my Simply Safe system is back at home watching. Like last week, I was out of town, an important package was left on my porch, and because I got the Simply Safe alert, I was able to call my neighbor and ask him to grab it. Package saved, crisis averted. But Simply Safe does more than just help preempt porch pirates. The problem is that most alarm systems only react after a break-in. By then, it's too late. The bad guys are already inside. So Simply Safe has solved that problem. Instead of being reactive, they're proactive. Their AI-powered cameras spot threats before they reach you, and then their trained team jumps in, confronting the intruder and contacting the authorities. Instead of constantly watching your doorbell camera, you can put your phone away and sit back knowing that your home and family are actively protected. I love a clear solution to a big problem. If you do too, then check out Simply Safe. You can try it for 60 days with a money-back guarantee, and there are no hidden fees or long-term contracts. Right now, problem solvers listeners like you can save 50% on a Simply Safe home security system at simplysafe.com/problem solvers. That's Simply Safe, SimpliSafe, simplysafe.com/problem solvers. There's no safe like Simply Safe.
From Entrepreneur Media, this is Problem Solvers, a show that solves entrepreneurs' toughest problems. I'm Jason Pfeiffer, editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine, and each week I take a problem that you're probably dealing with and get tactical solutions from people who have been there and solved that. So, let's get solving. Here's a question that I think haunts so many entrepreneurs and so many aspiring entrepreneurs, and that is, when do you know that you've got the right idea, right? Ideas are these abstract promises. They're a thing that just is in our head that we have to take into the real world, that we have to commit our time and energy and reputation to, and eventually, and money, and then eventually ask other people to commit the same exact thing. And that's really hard because, you know, it's just an idea. We all have a lot of ideas. And I puzzle over this question. I've been asked this question so many times. How do I know it's the right idea? How do I know when it's time to move? And that is why I was really compelled and wanted to talk to my friend Nir on this show. Because Nir, well, when I first met Nir, he had a very different plan than the one that he has now. Because Nir was a guy who had built a company and sold that company and did not plan to do it again. He had done really well for himself. He was imagining other things for his life. And then one day, I got an email from him saying, "This is exciting news. I'm launching a new company." And I thought, wait, Nir, you weren't going to be doing that. And now you are. And so the question is, well, how do you find the idea that's worth changing your plans for? And Nir is a smart guy and a really thoughtful guy. And I was pretty sure, and it turns out I was correct, that he would have a really smart and thoughtful answer to that. So first of all, let me introduce Nir.
My name is Nir Zuckerman. I previously co-founded a company called Anchor.
And if you know anything about podcasting, which, you know, I know a thing or two, then you definitely know Anchor. Anchor was a podcasting platform, let anybody create, distribute, monetize podcasts. Near founded it in 2015, sold it to Spotify in 2019, and then joined Spotify, where he built up their audiobook business. So I was very excited to connect with Near because, you know, I'm a podcast guy. I knew all about Anchor, and I also listened to audiobooks on Spotify. But anyway, that was in the past. Now, here's how he introduces himself.
I am the co-founder and CEO of Obo.
And what is Obo?
Obo is the world's first ever generalized learning platform powered by AI, where anybody can go to learn anything in the most efficient, effective, accessible way ever.
Which is to say that you go to Obo and you tell it literally anything that you want to learn about, generally, hyper-specifically, and it will produce a just range of ways to teach that to you. It'll create a course. It'll create an audio course. It'll create quizzes. It's like, and all just instantly. It's really cool. But like I said, when I first met Nir, this wasn't on his mind at all. Instead, lots of other things were. He had just recently left Spotify. He was thinking about all these other things that he wanted to do. He was telling me about how much he was enjoying just spending time with his kids and exploring writing. And I just, I know enough serial entrepreneurs to really have been able to predict that he might have just jumped back into another company, but he didn't seem like that was his direction. And then suddenly it was. And so I asked him now, what was it about this idea, about this opportunity that forced him to change everything?
I'll tell you a funny story, which is I have two kids and my son is 6 years old. And when we launched Obo, I'd been working on it for about a year leading up to the launch. Mm-hmm. And in early September, we launched it publicly to the world. And it was very exciting. I'd been working really hard and my kids knew about it. They had seen it. They gave me a bunch of feedback about it. And then on the day that we launched, I came home and they knew that it had been a big, exciting day. And my son asks me, now that you launched it, are you done working on Obo? And I was like, actually, this is the very beginning. It really just started.
Can I tell you my version of that story? Which is, doesn't feature me, but it features a more famous person with my last name, which is that I was having a very fun conversation with Michelle Pfeiffer, who had started and continues to run a fragrance company called Henry Rose. But she told me that the most disorienting part of being a now new entrepreneur for Michelle Pfeiffer was that it was literally the complete opposite of the way in which she had worked the rest of her career, because Michelle would get hired to be on a movie, which would mean that she would spend a bunch of time making the movie, and then it would reach launch, and she would have to do some promotion for the movie, and then it's done. Like, and then she walks away, and she never has to think about it again. And what she discovered about launching a business is that that's just the start, and then it goes on forever. And that was a really hard thing for her to orient to. So it makes sense that other people, especially six-year-olds, would not quite comprehend that.
Back to your question around why change your plans and go into this and complete left turn from what I was planning on doing. I think the real question is, why change your plans when you were crazy enough to do this the first time?
Yeah.
And you saw what it was like and you saw how insane it was.
Totally. And also, Nir, you had a great outcome, which is beats the odds. So, you know, in a way, somebody could say, come on, man, you rolled the dice and it worked. Why would you possibly do that again?
Well, look, the truth is, at the time that you and I met, when I had left, I think one of the things that I had not realized is life is short. Mm-hmm. You want to do things that are meaningful. Mm-hmm. And most of the things that I had thought of as, if I were to go start a company, I would do this or I would do that. The reality was they were just not intrinsically motivating to me. You know, they're interesting business opportunities. They're interesting jobs. They're interesting things I could have done. But I think one of the benefits of being in the position that I was in is that you could really reflect on what is the thing that I value doing with my time. And for a while, when you and I first met, and this was certainly the case, I took some time off and I spent time with my family, and I was able to drop off and pick up my kids from school and not work hard. And I had projects on the side, but they certainly weren't full-time things. And that was amazing. And I wouldn't have traded that for anything. And yet, at the same time, while all that was happening, I just kept coming back to the same set of ideas over and over, constantly. I would think about it all the time.
So if the question we're asking is, how do you know if an idea is worth pursuing, is worth giving all of your time to? Then a good starting point for the answer is what Nir just said, which is, to know if an idea is worth your time, you first see if the idea is taking your time, if it's the thing you just can't let go of. Today on Problem Solvers, we're talking about this and so much more: how to identify the right idea, how to pursue it, and this very interesting balance that Nir has identified of when is there a moment of opportunity that can only be seized if you move fast enough. Coming up after the break.
Why are businesses like HelloVet choosing Apple products and services?
One of the great things about Apple products is that it's really easy for us to handle the security, the updates, the pre-installed applications. We've been able to do that without a dedicated IT support team.
Find out how Apple products and services can help you run your business at apple.co/HelloVet.
All right, we're back. Today, I'm talking to Nir Zuckerman, co-founder and CEO of Obo. And let's just pick up where he left off. He was talking about how he had this idea that he just could not let go of, even as he was enjoying some downtime after selling his past company. And here's what comes next.
And I feel like everything that was happening in the world around AI and technology and the concerns that people express around the future of AI and the impact that it'll have on us and screen time and social media and the psychological effects of all these things, like, it really just continually reinforces how negative people are around the future of technology if it's being harnessed in a particular way. And let's be honest, in the way that most people harness it, or most companies harness it. And yet there is a flip side to that, which is this thing that I kept coming back to, the realization that all of this advancement that we've had in technology in the past few years could actually be a massive force for good and for positive change around allowing humans to take back the thing that they've given up over the course of the last few decades, which is their attention and their curiosity. And they've kind of, you know, yielded to the algorithm in a way that, I don't know, that's not the future I want to live in. And that's not the future that I want to raise my kids in. And I want them to be curious and I want them to be adventurous and love learning and constantly want to soak up new knowledge. And I think the problem was an itch that I kept trying to scratch. And the awareness of what you could do technologically now to solve that problem just became so apparent. You know, if I had left my job and taken time off 3 years earlier, I don't think I would have gotten to the same conclusion. And possibly 3 years later, I also wouldn't have gotten to the same conclusion. But there was something about this window of time where I'm like, there's this big problem that we have as a species that is not being addressed, despite the fact that the tools are finally there to address them. Can someone do something about this? Can someone build the first ever generalized learning platform? Because there really has not been one. There really, you know, if you think about how people learn online today, there are billions of people every single day who use the internet to learn. They use Wikipedia and ChatGPT and Google and Reddit and YouTube and podcasts, none of which was built for learning, right? And so people have this innate curiosity. They have this desire to expand their knowledge and to learn new things. And yet they're using resources that were not in any way built for learning. They're just stitching together these very high friction experiences to try and learn the things that they want to learn on a platform, which is the internet, which was not built for learning. It was built for attention grab. And so could we finally build the first real generalized platform for learning on the internet and empower people to do the thing that they're already doing at a scale of billions, but doing it efficiently and effectively and productively?
aspiring entrepreneurs often wonder, where does the great idea come from? And you said something interesting there that I want to turn into something of a formula to put back to you to see if you agree or not, which is that the really great ideas come from identifying what had been an unsolvable problem that is newly solvable, which is to say that something has changed, whether that is technologically or in culture or something. Something has changed that enables this problem to be solved now. I've heard it said that the questions that you should ask yourself when you're thinking about starting a business are, why this, why now, why me? Naveen Jain taught me that. But anyway, I feel like that's what you're saying, is now is this moment in which we have this new technology in AI that is enabling us to do a thing and to solve a problem in a way that just simply couldn't have before. And that is not just a compelling idea, but it is actually a call to action, because if you wait on it, somebody else will do it, or the moment will pass you by. The most compelling way to identify an opportunity worth changing your plans over is, can I find a previously unsolvable problem that has suddenly become solvable?
I'll take it even farther than that, which is,
please,
I do agree with you, and I'll take it even farther in the sense that entrepreneurship is very hard. It's a marathon. Mm-hmm. It's very emotionally draining. There are a lot of ups and downs. The people who succeed are the people who are motivated to solve the problem long term. And I think that starting a company, trying to tackle a challenge that is not motivating at your core, it's an easier way to burn out. Now, I'm not saying that there are not people who are successful building businesses that they're not sort of fundamentally motivated to build and to solve, but it makes it a lot harder. And so I think to the why this, why now, why me thing.
Yeah.
Learning for me has been something that I have been thinking about, and I've been thinking about the pain points of it as it pertains to myself for many, many years.
Hmm.
And that to me is a really interesting thing to like reflect back on, because if you think about a problem for many, many years, and it is a problem personally, even if it's small, if it's a problem that you have been tackling or been thinking about and been coming back to constantly and recognizing, you got to keep your eyes open and look for these things. Like, where are the pain points that I have in my day-to-day life that I wish were solved? And you just keep coming back to these things. And eventually what happens, hopefully, as technology advances, is one of these technical innovations happens that suddenly changes your perspective on that problem. I've been thinking about ways to implement versions of what is now called OBO for many years to solve problems that I personally had even before AI and LLMs exist, or before LLMs existed and before the AI revolution that we're currently going through. It had been something I continually came back to. I think the turning point for me, the why did I suddenly decide to do this, came from a problem that I had already been thinking about. It's not like the AI revolution opened my eyes to a new opportunity that existed. This is something that I had always been motivated to solve, and I'd never had the tools to solve it. My original perspective on it was, oh, great, this lets me build a bunch of stuff to solve the problem for myself. And then the more I started thinking about it, the more I realized, well, hold on a second, it's not just me, it's billions of other people on the planet who suffer from the same problem.
Can you define the problem? Like, yeah, that's interesting, because you defined the problem in a way before, in a whole bunch of different interesting insights about like, what is the internet built for and what could it be used for? And obviously, I don't know that we're always, as a culture, trying to figure out the best way to learn information, to communicate information. So I like understand abstractly the problem. When you say you have been grappling with this problem, I'm curious like what that actually specifically means for you and how you started to see it in other people.
I am a self-taught programmer. A little background on me. So I studied political science undergrad, a degree that I've never used professionally. I then went to law school.
You are one of many people out there.
Yeah. But then I did what poli-sci majors do, and I went to law school, and I got a law degree, and I passed the bar exam, and I never used it professionally. And so from an academic standpoint, the formal education that I've gotten and the degrees that I have, sure, they have trained, law school in particular, trained me how to think in a particular way. I'm not going to discount that. But the actual piece of paper itself, the diploma that I still have that says that I graduated law school and that I graduated with a poli-sci degree from undergrad, have never been directly relevant to the work that I've done professionally, ever. And all of the things that I've done professionally came from me teaching myself. So when I was in law school, I started teaching myself how to program originally because I actually envisioned this future in which I would be a lawyer and I would never be able to do interesting technical work, even though there was a part of my brain that really liked math and science and I'd always enjoyed that in school. And so I started programming because I thought this is a good hobby for me to scratch that itch that will always exist in my brain as I'm doing things that are not technical in the field of law. And as soon as I started teaching myself how to do it, I fell in love with it. It is incredible how much you can learn, especially with the internet and the books that I had access to. This was pre-YouTube days, so it wasn't like I was watching videos of all the stuff that's available to you now. This was certainly pre-LLM, so I couldn't leverage all the amazing technology that exists. I had to really struggle to figure out how to teach myself the things that I wanted to learn. The resources were just not there. And yes, we've come a long way, but the truth is the resources still are not really there. Because if you think about all of the people who are interested in learning things, whether it's for personal interests or professional reasons, that have to then figure out on their own how to navigate getting that information and retaining it and learning it in a way that's effective, it's a huge burden to place on people, despite the fact that everyone has things that they want to learn.
Yeah.
Right. And so reflecting back on my own journey of learning how to program in particular, although this has been relevant to other things I've learned in my career, I think in a lot of cases, it's not that I learned because of the resources that were available to me. I kind of learned in spite of the resources that were available to me. And I had to force, because I was heavily motivated to learn it, I had to force myself to come up with solutions to this problem of finding the right resources and identifying the right problems to solve and taking on the right projects and finding the way to motivate myself to continue, even though it was really, really hard. Everyone goes through that. And most people give up. Most people give up. And if you ask people what they want to learn, they'll all have an answer to it. And if you ask them why they haven't learned it, it's some combination of, I don't know where to start. I've tried and it's too difficult and I give up. I'm not sure what resources I should even use. It's always some combination of that. But they all have the motivation. So clearly there's a big problem. There's a big disconnect between the fact that billions of people want to go out and learn a new thing that is not tied to some degree, right? They're doing it often as adults that are out of school and trying to take on new knowledge, and yet they're unable to do it because of the fact that there are not effective learning resources out there. There are incredible learning resources out there, but they only get you so far.
Yeah. Well, I want people to be aware as you are talking about this experience of yours, that what you are also laying out is a really valuable roadmap for identifying opportunity. Right? Because the things that you're describing here are you recognized something in yourself, in your own experience, and then you started to look around and ask, well, why is this not being served in a better way? And then also, who else has this problem and experience? And then what are their great frustrations? It reminds me of the classic, if you want to build a great business, then you find something with a high TAM and a low NPS, which is a high total addressable market. Lots of people want it. Low NPS, basically the experience of trying to solve for that problem is unsatisfying and you could build something better. So that's what you're describing. And that makes a ton of sense. And so then the next question is, well, then how did you start to think through what a better solution could look like?
Great question. I think I'd originally envisioned products and technical solutions before 2022. I'd been thinking about this, as I mentioned, for years, and I'd always had this vision of a learning platform that was powered by a dynamically evolving knowledge graph. One of the interesting insights that I had early on is if you think about learning a topic, you can deconstruct any topic into many, many subatomic units. And if you could do that, all the very small things that a person needs to learn in order to learn something high level. What you can do is build out a knowledge graph that is made up of all of these small atomic units. And then if a person comes in and they tell you that they want to get to a particular outcome, if your knowledge graph is sufficiently large, you can construct a personalized path for them to go achieve that outcome because you know exactly which atomic units you need to stitch together. That was always a really interesting core idea that I kept going back to. And I had built early versions of something like that pre-LLMs. And in 2022, one of the things that happened was when ChatGPT came out and everybody started talking about how powerful LLMs were, I originally thought, well, there goes my idea, because you can use LLMs to basically do what I described, then you don't need to build this whole robust architecture. And as I got to using them more and understanding the underlying technology more, I realized, no, actually, there are really fundamental limitations with what you could do with LLMs. The real platform that will solve the learning problem to make learning really effective and accessible and efficient is one that is actually built for the learning use case. And so a lot of what we've built is actually sort of at the intersection of these original ideas around knowledge graphs and leveraging atomic units of knowledge in really interesting ways, combined with the scalability and the cost efficiency that you can get through LLMs now.
And then you have to start thinking, well, okay, but how do people learn, and how could we build something that enables that? And how do we start to think about the complexities of how people learn? For example, lots of people learn in lots of different ways. And I'm asking this question because I'm, in a way, almost trying to reverse engineer the product that I have seen. And you and I haven't yet talked about exactly how you got to that product. So it's fun to do it with a microphone running instead of just at lunch. So when you first sent it to me, I think you had asked it to put together like a course on Entrepreneur Magazine or a course on me or something like that. And it was fun. But what was super interesting was just the number of different ways in which it was trying to teach me that information. There are all these different modules, as you had mentioned. There's a quiz. There's kind of straight lesson, but then there's also there's a whole variety of things. And I'm going to just hypothesize, you tell me or not if I'm right, that when you were building this out and you were thinking, well, okay, then how do we improve the way in which people learn? How do we create a product that is truly designed for learning, that you have to take into account what actually drives learning and retention across many different kinds of variables. And that is how you end up with something that tries to teach in multiple ways. Probably not because everyone's going to consume all of it, but rather because people are going to go through it and find the thing that works best for them. But I don't know. I'm just hypothesizing. What were you doing?
I think that's right. Yeah. People learn in different ways. The same person will learn different things in different ways, right? I think one of the things that we kept coming back to over the course of the year of building this was the power of multimodality in reinforcing that one of the most effective ways to learn is reinforcement. And reinforcement through multiple modalities is how we best learn. If you think about the thing that you went online to learn yesterday, chances are you actually consumed it through multiple modalities, interfaced with something through chat, you were reading something passively, you were listening to a podcast. Hopefully somebody listening to this podcast now goes off and consumes a different modality to expand, follow their curiosity path. That's the behavior that people already exhibit online. I think a fundamental challenge that entrepreneurs often have is this determination of how to latch onto existing consumer behavior. One of the hardest things you can do is introduce a new user behavior and get consumers to start adopting something that you foresee as the future of the space. That's not what we're interested in doing. We're interested in taking the behavior that people already exhibit online, which is high curiosity, free-flowing rabbit holing, multimodality, and putting it all in one place because it's never existed in one place before. And I also think it's a big core philosophy of mine is you do need to empower users to make their own decisions about how best to learn, because at any given minute of the day, I'm inspired to learn in a completely different way and engage in content in different ways. You have to give that ability to the user themselves. I think one of the biggest flaws with existing learning platforms that have been built for learning is that they're overly prescriptive around how best to teach you. The user knows best. The user knows how they should be learning. The user knows what they're in the mood to do at any given time. I'm totally fine with a person creating a course and using only one of the 9 different modalities that we have to learn right now. And that's only the beginning. We're going to be adding more. To me, it matters more that they get value out of the one they want to use rather than feeling like they need to check off a full list of different experiences. You know, the enjoyment of the product and the fulfillment of the product stems from using it as you wish, as you're navigating this rabbit hole freely.
Yeah. If people haven't done this for themselves, and I strongly recommend doing it, I have, which is to spend some time thinking about the process that you go through to retain information. We all learn a lot over the course of a day, whether that's just because we read some article or somebody told us something, and we forget most of it. And I had gotten to wondering, what is it that I do that locks information in? what I found is that for me, and I don't know if this is replicatable in Oboe per se, but like what I found for me, and this is why I love the work that I do, is that talking to a person, having them say something to me, and then me going through the process of teaching that thing to others, like repeating it in some way, recrafting it in some way, that is the thing that gets information to be sticky in my head. So now that is what I try to optimize for. I'm going to just make sure that I'm interacting with interesting people and then creating pathways through podcasts like this and newsletters and so on to then turn around and reteach that information. And that is how it will stick for me. So that's just me. But it's cool for you to be thinking about, you've got all these modalities, you're adding more, you're giving people basically a choose your own adventure path for how to best learn based on whatever they know about themselves for what creates sticky information.
That's right.
That's cool. How'd you build it? Like, how did you map out what would make the most sense? Like, even just thinking about all the different modalities, you just like kind of, were you just like talking to a lot of people, thinking about how things, were you looking at different education tools? Like, how did you just start to map this out?
It's an iterative process of you build something, you use it internally. I mean, one of the benefits of building a product like this is we are all users. Everybody who works on the team is an intended user of this product, right? And so you get really good gut instinct, qualitative feedback very early from the team around what works and what doesn't work. And so what we ended up finding was even with initial versions of specific formats that we thought would be effective at teaching, we were like, well, we really wish we could consume this through audio. Can we build some kind of podcasting feature? Let's try that out. And so we would build that. And what ended up happening through this iterative process and also talking to users, we had a beta where we were getting feedback from users, was the realization that the multimodality, it's not a flaw. The flaw would be being overly prescriptive around the format of learning, right? Mm-hmm. And it is intentional and by design that we are not being prescriptive around how best to learn, because after spending a year building this product, we realized we were constantly in search of another modality, another way to learn, even within specific modalities, a range of different, of how accessible the content is. So in the podcast format, for instance, we have a podcast that's very conversational like this, it's very lightweight. And then we have a lecture recording that's like a professor giving you a more academic lecture, because we want to offer people a variety of options across many different dimensions and let them pick and choose what they want.
Right. And just to be clear, so that people know what you're talking about, like you're talking about AI generated podcast. So if I want to learn about the Norman conquest, then it will be producing podcasts in both conversation style and lecture style, along with lots of other modalities to help me understand and retain information about the Norman conquest.
That's right. And to take it further, it's not just you want to learn about the Norman conquest, but you want to learn about the hats they wore during the Norman conquest. You can get as granular as you want. I think one of the other benefits of a platform like this is that if you're interested in learning about a topic through a particular framing, it's very empowering, right? If you're a person who's learning physics and you're interested in baseball, we should teach you physics through the context of baseball, as opposed to if you're interested in something else, we should teach it to you in another way. This is something that schools tend to not do because it's a one-size-fits-all thing. You have to find the lowest common denominator to try to teach people, all the students in your classroom, a topic. But now with AI, we can actually build you the physics course that teaches you through baseball analogies in a very efficient, personalized way.
I had not considered what hats people wore during the Norman conquest, but I did just ask ChatGPT. And the answer, apparently, for those wondering, the Norman conquest, by the way, was these people coming from France, from Normandy, who conquered England in 1066, and it absolutely changed the course of European culture. And anyway, coifs, conical helmets, hoods, and felt or wool caps, just in case you were wondering, because I was. Okay, Nir, Omo is in its early days. Tell people all about it. Tell people where, like, what would you recommend as a starting point people do with Omo?
Read something in the news that you're not 100% comfortable with, come to Omo and make a course about it. You know, come across some concept, somebody says a word, you see something on a TV show, whatever it is that you're curious about, just try creating a course on our platform. We will give you a magical experience and a personalized experience. And we are always open to feedback. So, you know, if you have ideas, if you have suggestions for where we take it next, we'd love to hear from you as well. To use Oboe, just go to oboe.com and type in whatever you're interested in the text box that you see and get started. It's that easy. You can make a few courses for free to get started and learn about anything you're interested in.
Amazing. Yeah. And what I did, of course, is that the first thing I did was made a course about myself, which maybe says something unflattering about me, but it was very interesting. And I learned all sorts of things about myself, but I will now use it to learn more interesting things. Here, so great to talk to you. Always really excited for just the beginning of this really fascinating journey. And you are tackling perhaps one of the biggest questions there is. Could we create a more informed people? And how do we self-empower people with information? And this is a really exciting journey.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And that's our episode. Now let's keep the conversation going. I write a newsletter called One Thing Better, where each week I offer one new way to be successful and satisfied and build a career or company you love. You can find it at onethingbetter.email. That's a web address, just plug it into a browser, onethingbetter.email. And if you get one of those emails and reply, it goes straight to my inbox and I will get back to you. Problem Solvers comes out every Monday morning, so make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss an episode. The show is produced by Emily Holmes and Money News Network. My name is Jason Pfeiffer. See you next week.